Hello, welcome to Of the People. Hitler would be proud. That's right, you heard it. Hitler would be proud. As I look around the country and I see the college, the anti-Israel, anti-US, by the way, why is it always not one or the other? It's always both. But as I look around the country and I see these protests spread, starting at Columbia, and now you have all these copycat protests, two thoughts come to mind. The first is that the Antifada, not that everyone knows what it is, but the Antifada is here in this country. Death to the United States, death to Israel, from the river to the sea. What does anybody think that means? So the fight is now, you know, it used to be, and if you go back to those old battle hymns, there was a battle hymn in World War I called Over There, and I would sing it for you, but then we would lose all our listeners. But it's over there, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the Antifada is not over there anymore, ladies and gentlemen. It's here. It's over here. It's in this country. So that's the first thought with all of this. And the second thought is really that Hitler would be proud. I mean, Hitler during World War II had something called the Final Solution. And the Final Solution, very simply put, was extermination and genocide of the Jews. Right? That's it. I mean, that's what led to the Holocaust. That's what, and so how many countries turned the other, you know, turned a blind eye? So you turn the other cheek. It's not quite accurate. But that's the Final Solution. Someone needs to tell me what the difference is between Hitler's Final Solution and the Final Solution, or the solution being proposed by the pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist, pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel, anti-US, death to America mob and crowd that we're seeing in the news. Because let's be really clear with all of this. You know, people are saying, well, you know, it's just college campuses and they're young and they don't know what they're talking about. That's a bunch of nonsense. They are organized. They are trained. And yes, they're easily led. The reason why Hitler Youth Movement, right? Hitler went after the youth for a reason. You go after the youth and you control the next generation. You cannot simply say that this is because they're young and they don't know what they're talking about. And they are being radicalized and they're being trained to be radicalized. And the apathy in this country, because people seem to think, well, it's only happening on college campuses. Coming to a town, usually a blue city, near you very soon. The question is, how many other excuses are we going to make before we as a country act? Now, you're starting to see the police act, but they've taken over Columbia's, the Dean's Hall, and I forget the name of the Dean's Hall. They're barricading it. This is reminiscent of Chad. This is reminiscent of Black Lives Matter, which we're going to get to during the show. But understand something. This is not just about the Jews. This is not just about Israel. This isn't even just about America. This is about a clash of cultures. And, you know, the UN issues, or is about to issue, or is toying with, you know, if you read the news, they're about to issue an arrest warrant for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, charging him with war crimes, and the international court, the UNICC, is going to issue an arrest warrant. Now, whether they do or don't, it's out there, and they're floating that trial balloon. And again, and the charges would be genocide in Gaza, which someone needs to, you know, there's no question there's been civilian casualties, but if there's any country that has gone to great pains, because they know they're under the microscope, to avoid as many civilian casualties as possible, it's been Israel. Juxtaposed against that, right, where the UN is going to charge a foreign head of state who's at war with genocide against the genocide from the river to the sea that's being pushed by these pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist supporters, and the UN is silent, and for the most part, the Biden administration is silent. There's a reason that in the Antifada, or in the Muslim world, they refer to the United States as the big Satan and Israel as the little Satan. So all I can say as I look around is that Hitler would be proud. He'd be very proud at what's going on in this country, and no one seems to really give a damn except a small percentage. And that's the monologue. Hello, Erica.
Good day, Robert. Good day, sir.
You know, all that evil needs to exist is for good men, in this case, good men and women, to do nothing. And the concern I have is the apathy for this. And the concern I have is that the facts are out there, and these are not spontaneous, organic protests. I mean, let me sort of connect the dots real quick.
Yep.
We started in 2008 with what? Occupy Wall Street. And they saw what worked and they saw what didn't. And, you know, okay, it was Occupy Wall Street. I remember Dartmouth had, you know, a little street corner. They had like three tents put up, you know, that kind of thing. But they were honing their craft. Who they are, we're going to get to in a second. Yeah. Then you saw in the summer of 2020, Black Lives Matter. All of a sudden, it exponentially increased. And now you're seeing it, right? On starts, you had all this, you know, protest, but now there was a really violent demonstration, right, in Columbia and taking over the campus, right?
Right.
And the same thing that happened to Black Lives Matter happened here. You know what I know we have a bunch of pictures I want you to put up, but before we get to all of that, the real question is, who's behind all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. I mean, who is the Wizard of Gaza, right? There's, the Wizard of Gaza, right? You have the Wizard of Oz, who's the man behind the curtain. In this case, who's the Wizard of Gaza? Because clearly these protests are organized. They all have the same tents. It all happened at the same time. They're all using the same slogan like Democratic talking points.
Well, how are they getting the Palestinian head wrap scarf things and all of, like, the flags? And you know, there's way too much organization for this to be casual. And that's the thing that people really need to understand. This is not a fly by night. Oh, we're really here because we want to be. I mean, I'm excited for what we're going to cover today, but people should know that there is tons of footage out there of these protesters being asked, oh, what are you here for? What do you do? And they have no idea. Most of these people have no idea why they're there, what they're protesting for, and why. And so
wait a minute, I have to interrupt you.
Yeah. Look,
and the reason I need to jump in on this is because you're right, most of them are useful idiots. I get that. But the problem is when you highlight that, it makes it seem to the average listener, oh, well, since they really don't know what they're protesting and they're really just college kids. And I remember how I was in college, or I was in my 20s, and if I didn't go to college, that it's this harmless, innocuous
thing
because they don't know what they're protesting.
Oh, no.
The key is
that's worse. I think it's worse.
Well, it's worse in terms of stupidity. The key is that these are paid, that the people leading this are paid protesters funded by dark money and soft money, C3 and C4 money. That's the key here. And there is a purpose. So the fact that most of them don't know what they're protesting is not the point. You want to gin up the mob. You want to gin up a crowd and have them become a mob. And that's what's happening in Columbia. Right.
You have all these kids don't even know what they're there for, getting all lathered up over something they don't understand. So it's evil begetting stupid evil. This is beyond anything I remember in my lifetime personally to this scale. Like, how can you be so ignorant of something so awful and run out there and be violent about it? I don't know.
But again, most of them, look, in all fairness, most of them are not violent. They're just a mob, right? And they are intimidating, they are threatening, they have signs that say, you know, kill the Jews, or we don't care if the Zionists choke on their own spit, or things like that. But I want to go to a couple of visuals and a couple of pictures. So the first picture is just here's the campus, you know, and this was several days ago, by the way. Things have taken on a more life of their own. This is the campus at Columbia. These are the protests that, you know, that we're putting up. I mean, that's the mob scene, that's the mob mentality, ladies and gentlemen. I drove by there last week. Okay. Wasn't quite a lot close, went through a heavy police presence to get there. I will tell you that it is pretty ugly, and it's a scary situation. And the fact that, by the way, I have a new name, like, it's not even just the Ivy League schools, it's the poison Ivy League schools. Right? Because Well, no, but think about it. There's a method here. There's a reason here. The poison that's being spewed into America and American culture is coming from the Ivy League colleges first and foremost. Right? What am I missing?
I mean, this is, think about, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about all of the scandals that have come out over the last several years of all these celebrities and people getting their kids into these universities. So now it's just like, oh, so all the politicians' kids and all of the celebrities' kids are even dumber than everyone else. Because that's who goes to these schools. That you have to get into an Ivy League school, you either have to be super smart or really rich. So whose kids are these?
Or you have to buy the test results scores.
Or that. So these are the spawn of the wealthy elite out there fighting for this stuff.
You know, I saw a poll recently that 80% of America supports Israel over Hamas in this war. But yeah, when you drill down into the numbers and the crosstabs of it, right? And this was a Harvard poll, by the way. When you drill down into the numbers, between 27 and 35 year olds, 72% support Hamas.
Do they support Hamas or Palestine or Palestinians? Because they really are.
You're going to make me go to the numbers? I'll go to the numbers.
I mean, that's the thing is because the way that the question is asked, if people say I support Hamas, a terrorist group, I don't know if I believe.
I quoted my numbers wrong. Ages 18 to 24, 57% backed Israel and 43% favored Hamas. However, among 55 to 64 year olds, 91% favored Israel. Right.
Okay. Now, this is and the question was specifically Hamas, not Palestinians or whatever.
Right. Not Palestinians. But let's go to some of the other visuals, though, because I want people to see, because here's the other thing. Let's go to the second slide. OK. And this slide
is that Tent City.
That is Tent City. So you look at Tent City and you see they all look the same, folks. They're all green tents. So did they all go to Camp Moore? And I don't know, Camp Moore still around, or Dick's Sporting Goods, and all buy the same tent. Oh, let's go here, right? They are having people bring in Dunkin' Donuts. They are being supplied. And it's all the same equipment. It's all the same language. All the same, right? This is Black Lives Matter in 2020, and now you're seeing it even more here. Next slide, though, is across the country, and I freely admit, and by the way, so I don't get charged with plagiarizing, I took this slide, next one, the map from a New York Post article, which did an in-depth across the country. And not only does the hate extend, look at all the places across the country. You know, I hesitate to put up the name George Soros because it's Open Society Foundation. Because right, the minute you say that, you paint him to be this boogeyman. You know, he's, you know, the Wizard of Gaza, right? But it's more than just him. There are all sorts of different funding sources, and they've honed their craft. These three people, we're going to go through these three people that you see on the picture. Let's go to the next one. Are paid. They get paid somewhere between, let's see. Let me see what are my numbers. They get $7,800 to protest, $2,800 if they're a fellow, and they're going to work between, you know, 8 hours a week organizing campaigns led by Palestinians. Let's go to the next slide, please.
Which next slide?
That slide. So that slide is, she is, let's see, Nita Laffey, University of Texas, right? Paid organizer. She's paid to protest. Next slide.
You got to give me titles. You got to give me names.
Oh, Malik Afene.
All right.
She's the one out in, and this woman is out in the UCLA system, or I'm sorry, UC, University of California system in Berkeley, right? Paid organizer. Next one would be the young gentleman, if I can find his name again, which is Craig Burkhead Morton at Yale.
I don't think I have a picture of just him for some reason.
Well, let's go back to the map.
But he's this guy.
He is lower right-hand corner, an African-American gentleman in the lower right-hand corner, ladies and gentlemen, at Yale, paid protester. So these people are being paid to protest. These are your leaders. They are bringing in equipment. From who's paying for all this? right? Obviously, we can go to the one picture of George Soros that we have up. I mean, this is not only Soros, but you got to understand, it's not him directly. It's through Open Societies Foundation. That's his 501c3 and C4. And there are other organizations. You know, next slide, because it's no longer him. Put his up son? The couple, of course.
Okay.
So this is not only Alexander Soros, right, who now runs Open Societies and runs the business empire, but who's he next to, Erica?
Anthony Weiner's ex-wife.
Huma Abedin, who was the close personal aide of whom?
Hillary Clinton?
Hillary Rodham Clinton. Interesting, don't you think?
Wasn't she named in the email scandal?
Makes you wonder why she is silent. In any event, let's go to the next slide. Just keep rolling them. I'll go with them. Just
okay. Howard Horowitz,
right? Former ultra orthodox guy. He has Westpac, which is White Plains, you know, political action committee. Also funds all of these people. And again, they can go through the numbers. You know, let's see. Open Society gave $300,000. And then let's show the Rockefellers, because you've heard about the Rockefellers, Esso Oil, right? That's David Rockefeller Jr., I think the fourth with his daughter, as I recall. $355,000 to these kind of organizations. So, folks, if you think, right, and look, they're free to invest their money wherever they want. But what happened to transparency, right? If you're going to fund those things, then step up and say, yeah, I'm proud I'm funding those things, right?
Yep.
But then you get Open Society that comes back, and see if I can find my paperwork here, and says the following. When they were challenged on this, they said, here we go. Open Society said the following after the Post published all of this. This isn't me, folks. New York Post. Open Society Foundation, for the record, Open Society Foundation has a long history of fighting anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and all forms of racism and hate. What do you think about that?
I think it sounds like a bunch of nonsense to me. It sounds like a bunch of commie gobbledygook.
Well, but you know what it is? It's as long as you can claim, like, you know, one of these is Jewish Voices for Peace. Mm-hmm. This is also an organization funded by Soros and Rockefeller, you know, Rockefeller Brothers, you know, nonprofit, right? These aren't Jews for Peace, right? I mean, but what's in a name? If you name something, you look at the way like Congress names the bills. Well, the Build Back Better, or the this will make your life
Affordable
better.
Affordable Care Act.
Or the Affordable Care Act bill. I mean, I feel like I'm reading something right out of Ayn Rand, right? You know, the committee for the committee for bettering society.
Because here's my thing. Okay, this is my question, and I might get canceled. I might get in trouble for this.
Uh-oh.
If I ran around and said, French people for the destruction of France, right? Or Christians for the demolishment of Christianity. And I ran, like, would anyone take me seriously?
No, but wait a minute. I have a better question. If you stood up and say all blacks should be driven into the sea. Maybe it wouldn't be the Red Sea. It'll be the Black Sea, right? Different part of the country. The world. But if you said all people of color, all Indians, all gays should be driven
into the excusable?
Sea.
Is it, does it become excusable because I'm the same race as those people?
Well, like, it's excusable because it's the Jews. And I hate to say it in those terms, but there's a history of it. There's a world, forget about a country history. There's a world history of it. But that's beyond right. that, it's the apathy in the country when they say, well, it's happened in Colombia, but, you know, it's not happening in, you know, little town Georgia. Right. Or it's not happening. So I don't have to do anything until it affects me. And what they don't understand, I mean, if you connect the dots between the political violence that's now rampant in Mexico during elections, which is our southern border, ladies and gentlemen, if we still have a southern border, and you connect all of that, you have to say it doesn't matter whether it's in your little town. It is in your country. The Intifada is here. Right. We have, and we're going to talk about the prophecies of a woman who passed many years ago, Arianna Fallaci, in the next segment, because she predicted this 20, 30 years ago and was not physically crucified, but certainly in the press was crucified as a racist, you know, all the tropes you hear, right? But anyway, I know we're getting the high sign, so I just want to.
Yes. Well, and we have a comment from one of our listeners. Ken said, Democrats can't win without the far left fringe and their useless idiots. And they are well-funded and organized from what I see. That is so true. The First Amendment protects them. But, you know, what we need protection from right now is socialism running rampant across our campuses in our country. And ASIC can help with that.
Socialism. The goal of socialism is communism. The world is quite familiar with socialism and the horrors socialism has brought with it. It wasn't that long ago. Actually, it's still with us. Socialism creeps into government slowly until it's too late. Socialism, the big lie. Yes, it could happen anywhere. This educational video was brought to you by the American Center for Education and Knowledge and paid for by people like you who care about the future of our democracy. Please help us continue our work educating the American public and consider supporting ASIC by making a tax-deductible donation at asicfund.org. You know, you and I talked about this, and there is, you know, she passed away, I want to say, in 2005 or 2006, a woman, remarkable woman, Oriana Fallaci, Italian journalist. In her childhood, she, you know, served in the underground against the Nazis in World War II. Really just a prolific career. But she was, to be clear, an atheist, hard left person. Right. So it's not like this is, you know, you can't say, you know, that's like calling Bill Maher, you know, a hard right person. Right. It's just, I mean, her background is she was a journalist and she was noted for, I mean, she interviewed she only woman who ever interviewed the Ayatollah Khomeini, not once, but twice, and had the temerity to pull off the chador. And he walks out of the first interview. He goes back to, and she tries to get a second interview. And he said, fine, only if you don't talk about the chador. And second interview, she goes right at it again. And actually, you know, I mean, this is who she has interviewed: Kissinger, Yasser Arafat, the prime minister of Germany. I mean, you know, the people. So this is a world-renowned author, journalist, I would say activist, socialist for her early years. So she writes many books, but two in particular. One of them is this one, which is called The Rage and the Pride. This was which she wrote right after September 11th, which she basically says that Islam is incompatible with the West. The values are incompatible. Now, look, I'm not making that judgment. That's for other people to make. But she was excoriated as a racist. And basically, though, what she says, which I think, you know, bears, let me bring out some quotes here, but is that there's an incompatibility between Islamic world and the Western world, and the global reality of the jihad and lack of response and the leniency of the West, our blindness, our deafness, our masochism, the conformism and the arrogance of the politically correct. Right. Which is Barack Obama. 20, 30 years ago, she's prophesizing, and it wasn't really a prophecy. It was really a rant, of which I know about rants. So I like to rant. And here we are, 20, 30 years later, and you have in Germany, you have them protesting not just for the death of Israel, but they're protesting because they want to bring around something called the Third Caliphate. Erica?
Yeah.
I'm throwing too much at you. I know. It's one of those days.
I didn't hear a question in there. I thought that
there wasn't a question. I just
wanted. Oh, okay.
Am I supposed to ask you a question?
I don't know. I was just listening. Am I supposed to comment on the lady who died or the caliphate part?
Either one. I'm told to have to go to my right. Move to your right, young man.
Yeah, move to your right. So you're off center.
Am I in right now?
No.
You want me more to the right?
More
to my right.
Yeah, your right. Yes. I'm
centered? Oh, I thought it was your right. Okay.
Yes, right.
By the way, Erica, you're right. It's a secret to a successful marriage, right? You're right, Erica.
That's right, baby. Ow! No. No, I think we live in a very scary time. And I think what's sort of interesting about it, particularly as a Christian, is listening to all of the end times prophecies that are going on and people are talking about. We've got the red calves being brought to Israel to slaughter, to rebuild the temple for the third time or whatever it is. And it's, you know, I just watched something the other day and this guy's like, actually the temple's already been rebuilt a third time based on this information. What I think is so fascinating is the Bible says you will not know the time or the place, right? Like God tells us we're not going to know, you know, as Christian, we're not going to know when Jesus is coming back. He's just going to come back. And yet everybody's out there being like, I figured it out though. Even though God told me I wouldn't be able to figure it out, I know that this is what's happening. And I think that all of that conversation just raises the temperature and gets everybody lathered up even more. And I almost feel like it's helping push us towards a worse outcome. You know, like if people weren't just expecting the end of the world to come, would they still behave in the same way?
Well, I'm not sure people who are expecting the end of the world to come are the ones that are protesting on college campuses. Right. I think, look,
well,
I think
that's not who I'm talking about, but
no, I understand, but I want to stay connected to sort of, you know, the current events of all of this, because, I mean, obviously if you're, you know, working within the faith communities, depending on which faith community you're talking about there, you know, there are those concerns and conversations, but before you even get to that, you have to see what's going on through a clear lens, which is this is not just about the Jews. It's not just about Israel. It's not just about the United States. This is a class of cultures, right? And the question for debate, I guess, is the Islamic culture compatible with Western values?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Anybody who questions that is an absolute fool.
Well, but I mean, you know, under the heading of being hoisted on your own petard, right, or being exploded by your own bomb, it's using the Western liberal leniencies, if you will, against us, right? Yeah, whether that's the southern border, whether that's immigration, whether that's multiculturalism, as we've talked about, because one of the things that's supposed to happen when you migrate into a country is you're supposed to become part of that country. And yet now we're seeing that demographics really is destiny, especially when you are not becoming part of a country. And then you can use that to go after the youth to sort of move or transform society. And that's the issue here. The problem is people are apathetic.
I mean, I think that's part of it, but it's also, there's so many layers to this. You figure everybody, it's not just Christians who think the end of the world is coming. People think the end of the world is coming because of climate change. There is this.
So it's a nihilistic.
It's everything. It's just everything is the end of the world. Everything is terrible. Everyone is a victim. Everyone is oppressed. Everyone is looking for someone to blame for their problems. And so, I mean, this just feels, honestly, to me, this is a natural progression of the nonsense we've been seeing over time. The Jewish people are disproportionately successful. And remember, you're white now, according to them. So you are the Jews.
Unless, of course, you're a Sephardi Jew, in which case you're not white, then you're a person of color and a Jew.
Not if you're successful, because anybody who's successful is white, even if you're Hispanic or any of that other nonsense.
What if you're an Ethiopian Jew?
I mean, you're still white now, because Ethiopians are super successful. I'm telling you, this is all part of the victim oppression Olympics.
So skin color matters until it doesn't?
Correct. I mean, that's their beliefs. So this is just with all of the other conversations about, white people are inherently racist and all this other stuff. Palestinians are the oppressed and Israelis are the successful oppressors, and they're white and whiter than the Palestinians who are browner, and therefore, ergo, henceforth, this is the justification. And
I think you're correct about oppressed versus oppressor, but I don't think it has to do with the color of their skin, because I don't think there's that much difference when you sort of look at them, you know, if you line them all up, right?
You're trying to be reasonable and rational, Robert. I'm not talking about a reasonable person.
I'm not trying to be reasonable at all.
It's the same thing. Black people are inherently oppressed. Anybody who's brown or unsuccessful, they're oppressed. And it's somebody else's fault, and we have to look for whose fault it is. So, of course, Palestinians being oppressed, it must be Israel's fault. It can't be the fact that they support Hamas. It can't be the fact that they made these decisions to just not live in peace with their neighbors. It can't be their own fault. It has to be someone else's fault. And so this campus insanity, again, it's just a progression of all the rest of it we've seen. The climate hysteria, Black Lives Matter.
It's not a progression. It's a plan. That's what you need to understand. This is planned. This is paid for. Uh-huh. Now, it's not planned.
But a progression. Do you think they could have gotten away with this 8 years ago? Do you think they could have gotten away with this in 2008?
In 2008, which actually would have been 16 years ago, but okay.
It is a progression. It is
progressing, and these are progressive values.
Okay.
Right.
I mean,
so I get, and look, I'm not fighting with you, at least not mm-hmm. quite yet. Right. I'm just telling you that you need to not, we need to not lose sight of the fact that, yes, it is progressing. Yes, it is progressive. But the key here is that A, it's planned and paid for, and B, the bigger picture is people think it's just about the Jews, and it's not. It's mm-hmm. about Judeo-Christian values. It's about Western values. And you're talking about exterminating a people, right? You know, a la Adolf Hitler, right? You know, the final solution, right? And therefore, you're talking about a third caliphate, which is what they're now starting to say. Certainly in Germany, they've been saying it. And again, let's remember, you know, the second caliphate was the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire lost in World War. And by the way, the second caliphate was, I don't know, 400 years, 500 years of Ottoman rule, right? I don't exactly know. I mean, I can look up the dates, but I mean, and maybe Lord Benjamin can look up the dates for us. But when you're talking about Sharia law and you're talking about driving the Jews into the sea, there's a nexus here. And the only reason I bring up someone like Oriana Fallaci, right, is because it's not like we weren't warned. It's not like we didn't see this coming, right? And I do want to read the other quote from her book, and this is from by The Force of Reason. By the way, The Rage and the Pride was written after 9/11, but after that, she got a massive amount of blowback on this, right?
Yeah. Did you ask the dates of the Ottoman Empire, or did the dates of the Intifadas?
The dates of the Ottoman Empire.
1285 to 1923.
Okay, so more than 400 years, 600 years,
mm-hmm.
650 years, right? So they're calling for another caliphate, right? Another basically religious government to run the world. That's what they're talking about. I know it sounds far-fetched, but let me go back to Fallaci. So she says that they have devised subtle and insidious ways to go after the soul, right? With the help of newspapers, TV, public schools, colleges, and universities, nailed that, they have developed a diabolical technique in which it is no longer necessary to engage in debate with those who disagree with their own party line. It is enough simply to destroy the public character of their opponents, either by outright slander or insinuations of insanity, or worse, to intimidate them into obsequious silence with the threat of criminal charges, thank you, Donald Trump, and even with the threat of death itself. It doesn't get, Erica, come back, where are you? It doesn't get, Erica, any more prophetic than that.
Yeah,
I mean, names at all. So
and that's the beauty of written history is that you can see this stuff coming. And it's unfortunate that she, like many other people, just instead of having an honest conversation about what is true and what is so, she had to be demeaned.
Right. And by the way, next show, folks, we're going to talk about Nostradamus, because we're going to go about from one prophecy. I was kidding. Might as well go to another. Right. I mean, right. And then we can go to the quatrains and, you know, what did they really mean by when the eagle meets the bear? Right. You know, 27 years, by the way, World War III is supposed to be last 27 years. And it supposedly ends when the eagle meets the bear. I'll let the listeners figure out who that might be.
All right. All right.
As we move on.
All right.
Oh, is it 5 minutes or 2 minutes?
I'm watching the time. You don't have to worry about when we go to break. That's my job.
Oh, that is okay. All right. Well, you know, I mean, look, folks, look her up. Oriana Fallaci, Fallachi. The two books you really need to read. One is called The Rage and the Pride. And it's not even really a book. It's more like a memoir. It's a rant, right? And it's The Rage and the Pride, yeah. Right? But The Force of Reason is really where the arguments are made and the understanding of who the enemy is and what you're fighting against. If you value your freedom, if you value Western culture, if you value any of that, time to get up and stand up, because it's coming to a town near you right soon. Right. I have friends in Canada and they're like, your country is crazy. I'm like, it's coming to Canada. If you don't think this is coming to Canada, you guys are nuts. Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're rolling it out here. So, but I have a question for you. How does all this end with these college protests in your mind? I can't. Oh, God.
I have no earthly idea. They're demanding that they divest from, you know, BDS, the boycott, divest, and sanction movement. And of course, they're all saying, no, we're not going to do that. But
Well, they're also requesting amnesty, right? Don't punish me. Right? Don't kick me out of school. Don't punish me. Don't take away my student loans. God forbid, right?
Right.
But so let me ask you a different question, because I'm old. How did the Black Lives Matter protests just all of a sudden end?
You know what? That's actually a really great question. I don't know.
They were there.
That's a good question.
They sprung up overnight. You know what? I can tell you how they ended.
I bet you there was no more funding.
No more funding, and they accomplished their goal. And so therefore they pulled it back. It's the same thing they're trying to do with Hamas in Gaza, which is, let's have a ceasefire. We've accomplished our mission. And as long as we survive, we can launch another attack, you know, next month, next year, whenever, and continue our drive to exterminate, you know, the Jews and drive them into the sea. It's no different. Black Lives Matter protests dried up when they had damaged Trump enough because, right? And then they pulled back the funding. And then all of a sudden, all these protesters just went away.
And, I love the gal. So can you say her name? I can't pronounce it correctly. The author we've been talking about.
Oriana Fallaci. So one, you've heard about the Fallaci papers,
right? No.
Which is an organized crime. Joe Fallaci, who turned informant on the mob, that he put out, you know, wrote, I don't know, called the Fallaci papers. These are now the Fallaci papers.
Oh, okay.
Was funny. I thought it was funny.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I don't know. But one of the things that I thought was really cool that I read that she said, she interviewed a pope. And she's an atheist. And she said, one of her quotes was, if an atheist and a pope can agree on something, then you probably ought to listen. That was the gist of it. And I thought that was so funny that even an atheist recognized, and these were her words, she recognized the value and importance of a Judeo-Christian Western culture on the world, even though she didn't believe it. And so I just wanted to reiterate you said about reading her books and checking it out.
She believed it. She didn't believe it came from God. Right. Mm. So she was totally vested into Western values, right? Those traditional, let's call them liberalism, you know, the tradition, not liberal by today's standards, but that traditional sort of Western liberalism of free speech and those freedoms. That's what she grew up with. She, like I said, she fought in the resistance against the Nazis in World War II. She just didn't believe they were God-given because she didn't believe in God. But she was an ardent defender at the end of the day of these Western values and saw, I think she quoted Diderot that basically said, Islam is contrary to reason or something like that. I mean, Lord Benjamin, look up Diderot's comment about Islam, right? And I'm not defaming Islam, you know, I'm just telling you that, you know, multiculturalism and values don't always mesh together, right?
Yeah.
So
we'll get that quote back when we come back from hearing from the defenders of American freedom. Ace it.
My favorite.
America came into being based on a shared belief and a common set of values. Unlike other nations that were bound together based on common ancestry, race, or caste, we came into being based on a simple and shared set of ideals. That the power of government is based on the consent of the governed. That life, the freedom to live life on our own terms in our own way, free from government interference, and liberty, our most precious value, and the pursuit of happiness, which means we are free to pursue that which we choose with the knowledge and courage to know that nothing is guaranteed to us in this life. Those values, America was founded on these basic inalienable rights. Freedom to pray to God in our own way. Freedom to think and speak freely without fear of punishment or harm. And freedom to gather in our places of worship and in our local taverns. And freedom to defend ourselves, our families, our homes, and our neighbors as we see fit. The American Center for Education and Knowledge is dedicated to protecting American exceptionalism anywhere and everywhere it is threatened. ASIC is a 501c3 and depends on your tax-deductible donations. Please help us continue our fight.
Does it feel like sometimes we're the only one fighting?
It does. That's why...
When you go around your friends, I mean, you know, do they just go, you know, listen, I don't want to talk about politics, or I don't want to talk about your radio show, right? I mean, what do you get from your generation? Because my generation is all up in arms, but as you go further down the age chain,
I find it less a deviation by age than I do by religion. People who are Christian or Jewish are way more invested because this is where our religion comes from. Israel is our founding. Okay. This is our holy land. There are people. So a lot of the people I talk to, the more religious they are, the more they care. That's the biggest difference that I see. But being in Texas helps because like everybody here is at least like tangentially Christian, even if they're not practicing. So they're not okay.
Tangentially. So if I lived in Texas, would I be tangentially Christian?
Yes.
I just wanted to understand your definition of this. But if I lived in Florida, another red state, would I be tangentially Christian there, or I'd be like tangentially Trumpian there?
Yes. No, I think it would still be Christian because it's the Florida, the Bible Belt. I don't know. It seems Florida, like it would be Florida, part of the
Florida.
Bible Belt.
No, it's not. Florida's Florida. It's not kind of part of the Bible. It's not part of the Bible. Florida is just Florida. Florida's like Ponce de Leon. Although turning to politics, right? You did see that Trump met with this Governor DeSantis.
Oh no, I didn't. Shut up. How did I miss it?
Ooh, that was a shriek. Ben, do you put up with that often? And Governor DeSantis is now going to go on the road and campaign for Donald Trump. Did you not see that? And Donald Trump said
they had a
great. Go ahead. You what?
Meet privately in Florida.
Is you accusing me of lying to you?
No, I just can't believe it. Oh my god! Oh my god! I cannot wait to hear this.
Look. The truth is, so I live in New Hampshire, as everybody knows. Governor Sununu, who campaigned very hard for Nikki Haley, and you know had some pretty harsh things to say about President Trump, after it was apparent that he was the nominee, he said, look, I'm going to support Trump and vote for Trump because he's better than the alternative. Right. And that's, and I think Governor DeSantis, who is a smart guy and, you know, wants the best for his state and his country, looks at the choices. Let's see, am I going to vote for Joe Biden if he is the nominee? Am I going to write in someone else like Mitt Romney's name, right? which, you know, it's going to be the same, which is the same thing. Right.
Might as well vote for Joe Biden.
Might as well put for Joe Biden. Or am I going to vote for Donald Trump as the best choice of the choice I'm given? Because, you know, there's an old expression that in the primaries, you're supposed to vote with your heart. And in the general election, you're supposed to vote with your head. But I didn't think you saw the DeSantis thing. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. So next I guess I'm not surprised. Like you said, I think a lot of people, when it comes to the general, are going to fall in line because we just need to get things done. Right. And being all in our feelings doesn't accomplish our goal. But I would be like, you better come up with a new nickname for me.
For you?
No, I'm saying Donald Trump. Instead of Ron DeSanctimonious, he needs a new nickname now.
One he retired that nickname. He retired that nickname.
Ron, so, the greatest. Excuse me.
So if Donald ever. Trump came up with a nickname for Erica Reddick, what would it be? Or should I ask your husband?
Ask Benjamin. We can do that in the after hours.
Benjamin, just keep it clean. Just keep it clean is all it. I can say.
But what would it be for you?
I don't know. You know, churning like butter. I don't know. It's always churning like butter.
All right, Diderot. We got that quote from Diderot. Do you want me to read it?
Actually, that's not the right quote I'm looking at. The quote from Diderot, if I can find it, basically says, Islam is the enemy of reason.
Mm.
That's the quote. Is it? But, I mean, you know, going to politics, right? Did you see? So Biden, right? I mean, you sit there and his latest gaffe was when he was talking about Donald Trump being such a bad guy. And he leans into the microphone and he says, you know, we all can't be trusted. Right? Now, obviously, you assume what he meant to say, unless if it was a Freudian slip, you assume what he meant to say was that Donald Trump can't be trusted. But go back and you know, so I and the White House has confirmed, so it must be right. The White House has confirmed that since Joe Biden has become president, he has committed 148 gaffes. Now, why they would track that, I don't really know, right? But the ones that I listened to, so yeah. So he's in Tampa at a campaign. He goes, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted? I sit there and go, okay. I mean, yeah, I guess my response would be, yes, Mr. President.
Right? Okay,
I
mean, so back up. Go ahead.
You said ellipse. Come on, you can do it.
Okay, who is keeping track of his gaffes? Well, and what is considered a gaffe?
Okay. Do you really think I got into the weeds? I read it. I read the number. I went, wait a minute. There's so many. I mean, here's the real issue. If there are 148 that they're acknowledging, what do you think the real number is? Because this is the White House that's counting. But so I don't want the definition. The fact that you're tracking it all at all.
This is what. So does this include his thing when he was talking last week?
His and
he
thing,
was
like, I hope not.
The thing where he was like, four more. He had his squinty, angry face. He was like, four more years. He read his instructions out loud.
Here's some of the other gaffes. He said it at a different rally on Thursday. Are you ready to choose unity over division, dignity over demolition, truth over lies? Here's my favorite part. Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Wait, what?
Okay.
What? Wait,
right.
What?
Are you?
What does that
are
even
you
mean?
Ready to choose? Excuse me. You know, do you think I'm inside President Biden's head?
Maybe we can start make a Biden dictionary. Okay. We were talking about merch opportunities. I think we should make a Biden dictionary.
That'd be really good.
Truman under the pressure and that like all the weird crap that's like mumbo jumbo that he says, we can just make up definitions too.
You know, And then, you know, obviously trying to have it both ways. He, another place he says, I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with them. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. Is that like the Hobbit there and back again? What is that?
Is that like it?
I don't know.
Yay, we love death. Yay, we love to see death and stuff. Like, who's saying that? I mean, unless you're some kind of a sociopathic sicko.
Wait a minute. So Lord Benjamin is sending us a note on what Wikipedia says on Arianna Fallaci. This one's yours, Erica.
Come on, you can do it.
So we're back to, go ahead.
Okay, so Fallaci states that Islam presents a threat to the very existence of Western civilization, of conscience, of toleration, of liberalism, a message which is summed up in an epigram. She quotes from the 18th century philosopher Diderot, Islam is the enemy of reason.
And that is the raison d'etre for the second book that she wrote, The Force of Reason. Anyways, it's a lot more fun talking about Joe Biden's gaffes, I can tell you.
He is a slew of weirdness.
Is Maria still listening to this program?
She is. She's backstage.
Hi, Maria. So, Maria, we're going to create a project. We want to catalog all 148 of President Joe Biden's gaffes. No, I'm serious. I think that's brilliant. Right? I mean, first of all, you know, we do need to fact check the White House, right? If they say there's 148, we need to find the 148.
There's really 782.
Who knows? But I think that is a brilliant project. And, you know, isn't it like a book in the making?
I'm feeling it. I'm telling you what.
Right?
Yep.
Right? So.
Yep.
So Maria said, you know, going, you know, laugh out loud. Maria, you think this is funny. I'm serious. I think that would be a runaway bestseller.
Even if it were something like, you know, I get these little mini constitutions to give out. So even if we did it like a little pamphlet thing like this.
You mean?
Oh, and Benjamin said, if you don't buy the book, you ain't black.
Wait, do you mean like this little pamphlet of the constitution?
Yes, exactly.
This is like, if you show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Yes, I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
So. Yeah. So,
all right, you guys, pre-order. Send us a message.
So, and Benjamin already has a name for the book: Biden's Guide to Blackness. Brilliant, don't you think? So,
I'm into it. I'm totally feeling
it. Okay. So, Maria, we're going to talk offline. Biden's gaffes, or I don't know, you know, Biden's Guide to Black. I think Biden's Guide to Blackness. It's probably a great title. So if we can use that, and we're going to start with that, you know, well, you know, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, or whatever it was he said.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, so, exactly. You know, I'm into it. All right. We haven't even gone to after hours yet, and we're off the rails. All right. We got about five minutes left.
Okay. But so the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, Ronald Reagan. You know, said that, you know, the government never met a tax they didn't like. And the only two things that are certain in life are death and taxes. Right.
Yep.
Except now, apparently, and you're going to love this one, if you were in California, because California just passed something called the exit tax. So if you live in California, Erica, you need to look this up. You know, don't ever challenge me. Okay. Look it up. All right. They passed something called the exit tax that if you leave California, they are going to tax you for the privilege of leaving for 10 years after you leave.
I remember hearing this about this and I was like, there's no way this can pass. Like there, like you can't, how, well, like you have no authority over people once they leave. First of all, okay. Let's talk about how taxes are theft to begin with, okay?
Okay.
Then you want to take taxes from me and I don't even live in your f-ing state anymore?
Ooh, they beeped you out. What was the word you just used? Just kidding. So hang on. This is a one-time tax that must be paid by businesses and individuals who relocate out of the state. The tax is based on the value of the business or the individual's assets, including property, stocks,
out of here,
but not real estate. And the reason it's not real estate is because they've already passed the mansion tax. I mean, can you imagine? I mean,
if you sell it, it's like an extra fee or some extra tax. Yes.
But you know, that stampeding sound you hear is not buffalo who are extinct. That stampeding sound you hear are any Californians who have any sort of sanity or net worth going, I'm getting the hell out of here before they, you know, they, tax my shoes. I don't know. Yep. It's just, but an exit tax?
I mean, it is outrageous. It is so, anybody who still lives in California, look, I get the weather's nice, okay? But there is nice weather elsewhere. You can leave.
I sit there and I look at, so it was passed. It's 0.4%. It to a maximum. You ready for this? Let's see.
Oh my God.
4% net worth over $30 million in taxes a year, except if you're doing the exit tax follows you to another state for up to 10 years. I mean,
up to 10. Who decides that? I mean, this has got to go to the Supreme Court, right?
Right. Well, look, so I have a friend, I have many friends who have not left New York and gone to Florida or other places. And it's the same. It's not an exit tax, but what New York does is you have to prove, like if you've been a resident of New York for all these years and all of a sudden you declare, well, Florida is my residency because Florida has what? No state income tax, much like New Hampshire. You have to prove to New York. And when I say prove, it's like a proctological exam based on the documents you have to provide, right? You have to prove that you are not in this state over 51% of the time, and they want 3 years of tax returns, and they want credit card receipts, and they want gas receipts, and they want utility bills. A friend of mine, he was, a high net worth guy, lived out in Long Island, decided, and he had, five homes, right? Sort of Mitt Romney level stuff. And he decided, because he was, grew up in New York, that he wanted to change his residency. So he had to not only be outside the state 51% of the time, but he had to go back. They didn't let him out for 3 years in New York terms of paying big dollars in taxes. Yeah. Because once New York gets their hooks in you, so it's all, look, this is about feeding the beast. I don't care whether the beast is the federal government or whether it's a state government, and it's always a blue government, right? It's a blue government that doesn't spend, is always deficit spending. They don't stay within their budget. I remember, it got to be in the 1980s, I hired someone to work for me who lived in New York, and we had to pay New York taxes, payroll taxes, and we had to have a New York workers' comp policy because she was an employee who resided in New York. I think she was with me a couple of years in my business back then. And I, again, very similarly, when we shut everything down, we had to prove to New York, and it wasn't like just send them a letter. We had to prove to them we no longer had the exposure. They kept billing us. And they kept requiring us. I mean, it's just, it's once they get their teeth in you, right? Because it's all about OPM.
That's right. That's right. It's how much of your stuff can I get other people to vote to give me access to, and now you've got, and can we be surprised by the state that's suing Donald Trump for not committing a crime and victim?
The state that's suing Donald Trump on a charge that's a federal law. Right. That the feds didn't think rose to that standard. Yeah. Do you really want to get me pissed off at the end of the show?
I'm trying to get you all lathered up and ready to go into after hours.
I lathered up this morning and shaved my head and shaved. So it's about all the lathering I can take right now.
I don't know. We're getting ready to get a little bit more lathered up, you guys. If you have been watching the show for this long, please do like the video. And just so you guys know, when we say subscribe, if you're on YouTube or any of these other social medias, you don't pay for it. So I think there's a misunderstanding that subscribing to the channel is some kind of paid subscription. It's not. I promise.
There's no paywall.
I promise. It's free. And when we do our after hours on Twitter and Rumble, that is also free. Nothing is paid for.
But Erica's not free. Ben says you cost a lot to maintain.
That is true. I am very high high maintenance. So exactly. Y'all, mama needs a new pair of shoes. Go to ASIC and donate. And for those of you who are watching, who want to watch the after hours where we get, where we can be a little bit more free with our words, you got to follow us on one of the free speech platforms of YouTube and Rumble.
You mean,
I'm sorry. What did I say? Rumble and Twitter. You
mean we can be more free than this?
Yes.
I thought we
were pretty free. Yeah, I can today. Swear. We can even swear and say naughty words that you can't say on YouTube.
Anything? Is this like anything goes?
Anything you can do, I can do better.
That's not anything goes.
Okay. All right, y'all.
Don't give up your day job.
I'm going to run the outro and meet us over on Twitter or Rumble.